Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
so he can play football.
He's coming down
right
from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Things might actually be half decent out here for the boys in black and gold. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into another edition of Steeler Fact or Fiction. I'm your host, Zach Barnes, and I'm alongside, as usual, my lovely co-host, Mr. Brian Hamlin here. Brian, we're super pumped up about this because I think you said it best just before we started here. You go, hey, this team just beat the best team in the league, knocked off the only undefeated team left. Pretty amazing stuff, huh? I'm going to tell you that this was better than decent. This was mad decent, Zach Parnes. This was a huge win. And just like a couple weeks ago, this Pittsburgh Steelers came out and punched the team in the mouth. They absolutely took it to Alex Smith, Andy Reid, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill. They gave it to that whole team in the first half, and they absolutely rocked the Kansas City Chiefs out of Arrowhead Stadium real early in the game. Here's the thing. You can't win a game in the first half, but you definitely can lose one. And I think that the Kansas City Chiefs were just so under the gun there in the second half. I know that they put it together in the fourth quarter, and I know that they had a drive at the end of the game to potentially try to win the game. But if the Steelers could have finished, this would have been an A+. But this is a solid stamp A. I love to see the Steelers at 4-2 after a nice road win.
Well, yeah, especially since it's going to come in one of the hardest places to play in all of football, Arrowhead, like you mentioned. They got a little bit of the fortune early. Obviously, Zach Fulton, the snap,
yeah,
was pretty bad.
He was getting the start for some. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean. That was really bad. That was really bad. And for them to start the course of their offense with that was not super great. But unfortunately, that's the tail of the tape.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, though. The Steelers gave that right back. You know, they gave it right back with a special teams blunder. And I think you got to think about the fact that in this game, right off the bat, in the first quarter, the discourse was weird. A lot of stuff was happening out there in the field. You got the muff snap there. You got Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown with all kinds of confusion on a punt. You get Le'Veon Bell in the second quarter getting that penalty for punching the goalpost.
Yeah.
I think we're going to talk about this throughout the rest of the show in Fact or Fiction, but it was a weird game for the first half, even though the Steelers defense just absolutely took it to the Chiefs.
Yeah, and you know it's going to be cool to break this one down. We got all sorts of stuff to talk about. Ben Roethlisberger, Martavis Bryant, they're all on the agenda. The show wouldn't be possible, however, without the sponsorship of Frank Walker Law, the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia. It's home to one of the nation's top 100 ranked trial attorneys in Frank Walker's. For his PA office, call 412-212-3878 or to reach his West Virginia office. Give him a call at 304-712-2089. You should also check out his website, frankwalkerlaw.com, to see how he can help you in your time of need. Frank Walker Law, real talk, real experience, real results. We got some real results out of the Steelers this week, and that is really, really great. But let's delve into it here. For those who are not familiar with the show, well, you should be already because we're about 6 weeks into the season now. But we're going to come up with some bold statements. We either go with fact, meaning we think they're true, or fiction, meaning they are false. So, without further ado, let's get started. I mentioned Ben Roethlisberger a little bit earlier. He's a guy that I want to stick with for 2 seconds. Not a very impressive day from Ben. 17 of 25, 250 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. That pick was real bad. I know Antonio Brown claimed fault after it, but that was just a poorly thrown ball to begin with. I'm just wondering, even if he had ran the correct route, is that a catchable ball? And I think the answer is no. I think that there were a lot of issues that are going on with him. Listen, his last couple of games, Brian, we had this debate last week, and unfortunately we did not have a show last week. But, you know, his game against Jacksonville, he threw the ball 55 times, had five picks, a quarterback rating of just under 38. You know, it looked like one of the worst performances of his career, and I thought it was the worst performance of his entire tenure in the NFL. You know, 14 seasons for this guy, and here he is. You know, we think that he's getting a little bit better, like a fine wine. He just gets better with age. And now, you know, we saw something really terrible. And this week, you know, not the best, better, but not exactly, you know, what is going on here. He obviously completed many more of his passes. There was a lot bigger of an emphasis on the run game as well. But my question for you, Brian Hamlin, is fact or fiction, are we seeing Ben Roethlisberger fizzle out? I'll start and answer and say fiction. And the reason I say it like that is because I'm nervous. I'm nervous because I watch this guy go out there and keep trying to make plays like he's 24-year-old Ben Roethlisberger. And that's simply not the case anymore. You know, this guy's 35 now. You know, he's knocking on the, you know, the door of maybe being a has-been here in a few years. And we've talked about it in the past about whether or not we're going to see a longevity from Ben. I don't think it's necessarily a fizzle out. I think it's a slow down, though. You know, I hate to use this example because I feel like it's so, so morbid, but it's like when someone just gets older, like when you see a grandparent get older, and it's just like, okay, everything's there, and then slowly, you know, it's harder for them to walk upstairs. You know, they need someone to help them with groceries. Maybe they get that handicap parking pass. For me, that's what it looks like. It looks like this man is about to be headed on to the next chapter of his career, and that next chapter is not playing football or at least starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now he is. I think he's got a chance to win another one. I think we both think that. But I think there's a little cause for concern, and I don't know if Josh Dobbs is going to be the guy here to take over in a couple of years.
Well, that's a lot. That's a, you know, listen, I like your support for the argument here, although I'm going to say fact. I think that Ben Roethlisberger is undoubtedly fizzling out.
Wow.
Undoubtedly. I think that you looked at someone like Tom Brady, who has ultimately – like, the reason why Brady is so great is because Brady has been able to advance his body over time. Like, Tom Brady now, the 2007, when they went 15-1, they are like body type, like he's probably in better shape now, you know, like, yeah, I don't know if that's, that might be subjective, but I'd like to think that Tom Brady has been able to like use his better mind plus his body to this date. And now, and that's why he's gotten better with age. Ben's only going to get worse. Ben's hurt. Ben's had bad knees. Ben's got that bad shoulder.
Oh yeah.
He's got a bad ankle. He's even had concussion issues. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger has always been the kind of guy, he's been rough and tumble. He's a mutter. I'm big on that. So here's what I'm saying. You're talking about handicapped parking spaces. And do you want to know who Ben Roethlisberger's handicapped parking space is? Number 26, Le'Veon Bell.
Yep.
And when he gets 32 touches a game, you're going to, he's going to see success. He's almost infallible. And I mean, I think that the Steelers are gonna have to lean. Ben Roethlisberger wore 7 for John Elway. John Elway, late in his career, had a Super Bowl run with Terrell Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that Elway had his drive in that, I believe. Or not the drive, but he had. Elway was kind of like Peyton Manning last year. He's coming out and he's making the throw on 3rd and 6 in the fourth quarter. And the defense keeps him in it. And late in the game, I think Ben can make that throw 3rd and 6. But I don't think I think Ben's done winning football games in the first half, going, throwing for 5 touchdowns against the Texans or the Ravens. I don't think he's going to do that anymore. I think he's going to be the guy that you can see in the fourth quarter coming out and making a drive there.
So that's interesting that you talk about his adjustment versus that of Tom Brady, because Tom Brady, year in and year out, I mean, this is now why we're going to regard this guy as the greatest quarterback to ever play, simply just knows how to play to his strengths. And now his strength is keeping himself in the pocket and making a quick throw. And if it's not there, taking the sack or getting rid of the ball.
It's like never been Ben's strength ever.
Never.
It's never been his thing. So like for us to assume, either as a fan or as an objective observer, for us to assume that Ben Roethlisberger is his body is going to last for that much longer is just, he just doesn't have that durability because his whole career he's relied on things that put his body in jeopardy. And like, frankly, if we want to see Ben Roethlisberger play 16 games, we're going to need to see him throw the ball 25 times tops.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we saw this week, 17-25 for Ben. We'll see if we get a similar sentiment next week. Going to be interesting to see how that works out. The next thing that we're moving on here to talk about on Fact or Fiction, this one's interesting here for me because I am, now this story is changing. And this is a little weird. You know, yesterday he's claiming, that he wants out. Of course, when I say he, I mean Martavis Bryant here, the wideout. Allegedly asked for a trade, saying that he was unhappy with the direction that the team was headed, which for me doesn't make any sense. For God's sake, like
he's not getting the looks.
No, not at all.
But he doesn't. Yeah, continue with the question.
So my biggest thing here, Martavis Bryant now mourning because now this story is changing over the last couple of hours. Like I said. He's now claiming that he's perfectly happy with the team. He would never request a trade. Why would he do that? I'm wondering if he maybe got a little talking to from someone, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to phrase this a little bit of a different way. I want to know if that's what really embodies a Steeler, because we've seen that in the past from guys like Mike Wallace, Antoine Randall-El, guys who are looking for big paydays. And are looking to be the number one option for another team.
It's the thing of wide receiver. People love wide receivers. Wide receivers have big personalities, and they want – and honestly, if you want to be a great wide receiver in the NFL, you really need to have that big personality. I mean that. Think about the greats in history. Rice, Moss, hell, A.B., Odell. Like, I have no idea what Lance Allslot was worth. I don't know what he was like in the media, but – I'd like to think that like receivers in general, like they tend to have the big personality, and if I'm not surprised that he has expressed in the past that he wants a trade, but yo, like who really wants him? The Steelers have been patient with him. I feel like if he was in another team, he might be out of the league right now.
Well, especially because the guy just served
Josh Gordon, and he's never had a year like Josh Gordon ever.
Yeah, well, he and Josh Gordon have both served year long suspensions.
Yeah.
And the Steelers have stuck by this guy and been like, hey, like if you can prove yourself, we're going to get you back out there on the field. So that my question, here we go, Brian, fact or fiction, Martavis Bryant asking for a trade solidifies that he's not a Steeler. He's just not by character. This is where, once again, like, I don't know how to answer this because earlier today I would have said fact. And now that this story is changing, I'm like, fact.
Well, because of his tweet last night?
Yes. And also, he's saying it in interviews today, post game and stuff like that. I don't know, man. It's tough.
I'm gonna plead the fifth here. I'm not gonna give you an answer because I don't know. I just don't know what's good in that locker room. Like I've heard that Martavis Bryant in the off season like worked really hard. I heard that he put on what like 20 pounds.
Yeah, put on great weight, great size.
I mean, I'd like to think that his attitude changed. Part of the reason I'm pleading the fifth year is because I'm a fan of him. I like Ken. I like Martavis. But that being like, despite his off the field issues. But that being said, what's he got? 17 catches this year?
Yeah, on the dot.
He had a cool touchdown.
Targeted double that amount. He's been targeted 34 times.
Yeah, through six games, it's like. It's not bad. It's not terrible.
Well, comparatively, Antonio Brown has been targeted 74 times this year, but, that's the best receiver in the league. 34 times for Martavis, as I said. Juju Smith-Schuster has only been targeted 24. It seems like it's been way more for him. And then
he's made – well, he has 15 catches, 15 to 24. Martavis Bryant, 17 for what was he, 17 for 34, yeah.
It's wow. It's interesting to see, you know, he is the number two guy. There's no doubt. I don't think anyone debates that. I don't think Tomlin would. I don't think Juju or Eli would say, no, I'm the number one guy on this team. Uh-uh. This is a weird experience for me because I was really hoping to see a breakout year out of him. I drafted him in every fantasy league that I could simply because I think that he has immense potential to have those games where he has eight catches for, like, you know, one of those routes where he runs where he gets, like, a 50-yard touchdown ball.
He and Ben have not – I think they've connected on one pass over 40 yards this year, and that's kind of been his – he's always said, I'm not a one-trick pony, but he might be looking like a one-trick pony. He might be our – the new Mike Wallace.
Ooh. Ouch. See, here's the thing. Last year on the show, other Brian Davis and I talked a little bit about the one-trick pony quality of Sammy Coates. Would you relate that to an almost very similar Sammy Coates sort of situation? Because for me, I don't think that right now, you know, we're looking at a wideout who is 100% ready to do what this team needs of him. I'm not ready to call him a one-trick pony yet because I've seen him run a bunch of slants. You know, he's good at isolating himself from defenders, but I agree with you. I think the connection there with Ben is not there, and it's projecting poorly on him, which is unfortunate.
I was a fan of Sammy Coates, for the record.
That's tough.
I missed that one.
I don't know how you're going to admit to that now.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where you're like...
I stand by it because I explicitly remember being in ninth grade and Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders both being rookies on that Steelers Super Bowl team in 2010.
Sure.
Yeah, and I remember, drafting them in fantasy and, like, starting them every week like a young 15-year-old would and, like, them putting up, like, menial numbers.
3 points.
Emmanuel Sanders had a touchdown the first week against the Ravens that year, actually. Fun fact. But – I'm a big fan. Yeah, anyway. So that's why I take the Sammy Coates spot, because I'll always claim that I like both of them back in the day. And I think that gives me ethos, right?
Well, fortunately, we don't have to have any ethos for Sammy Coates now, because that man certainly not. He's a Brown. Even worse.
That's gross.
Terrible. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, so from one side of the ball to the other, let's move a little bit of transition here. The thing that I want to talk about is a guy who I don't think is getting enough credit, and I'm going to go with a solid fact here. Sean Davis, the former University of Maryland Terrapin, you know, when he was brought in, there were two things that people knew about him. One, this guy likes to hit hard. He's a Steeler for that reason and that reason only, is that he goes out and he makes bone-crushing hits. He's a big dude. Not only that, he's a very smart and intelligent guy. Brian, I don't know if you knew this. He's fluent in three languages. He's fluent in English, French, and Chinese. Very, very intelligent man. And on top of it, he just seems to make great plays. And he seems to have this very good awareness on defense. And that showed this week when he was the tackle leader on the team. A lot of great stuff that we can talk about with him. But I want to ask you, Brian, fact or fiction, Sean Davis is the most underrated Steeler defender thus far this season. For me, I go with fact. I go with a big fact. Through six games, he's got 30 tackles, which doesn't seem like a whole lot, but take a look at the way that he covers the deep secondary. You know, he isn't there on that one very, very long touchdown pass that the Chiefs had last week. It was a horrible tackle from Artie Burns against DeAnthony Thomas. And quite honestly, I think that has just opened Davis up as the clear favorite guy in the secondary. I go with fact. I think that his impact on the field, when you watch him every play, he is within the spectrum of where the ball is almost every single time. He locks down defenders. And, you know, he's preventing some big, big gains for opposing teams here. I really like Davis. I think he's got great potential.
So I also really like Sean Davis. I'm going to go with fiction because I think that Vincenzo Williams is the most underrated player on this defense. He had 2 sacks this week, and I think that he's really been – I think he's really stepped up on the inside. You got to think about the loss of Lawrence Timmons, man. You got to think about what Vincenzo Williams has been able to do for this linebacking core. Anyway, that being said, I really think that Sean Davis has stepped up in the secondary. He came through with the play of the game this week. I think that breaking up that pass in the end zone in the early fourth quarter on 4th and 2 was a huge play. And that was really a play for who wanted it more. I think there was a tight end.
So it's got to be Travis Kelce, right?
No, it was not Travis Kelce. I think it was a number 84, perhaps. Whoever it was, Sean Davis made a great play on the ball. Definitely one of the highlights from the game. Andy Reid potentially could have challenged the play, and he did not. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later. I think low key Mike Tomlin owns Andy Reid. Just a little foreshadowing there.
Why not now? I mean, we both sort of gave our opinion on Davis. I mean, Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin have gone head-to-head a number of times, whether it's been, you know, Reid as a Kansas City Chief coach or him with the Philadelphia Eagles way back in the day. Obviously, they don't play each other that much. And now, you know, Andy Reid has pretty much lost every single game to Mike Tomlin.
Dude, they trashed him last year in the divisional game.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
A similar game, though, for the Steelers. Like, they kind of – like, they had it. They kicked the 6 field goals, but they kind of waxed the Chiefs, and then the Chiefs had a chance to win at the end, and then the Steelers came through with a big defensive play at the end of the game for the win. But anyway, I really think that Mike Tomlin, for some reason, owns Andy Reid. Everyone talks about how tough it is to play in Arrowhead, and even Andy Reid can beat the likes of Bill Belichick, but Mike Tomlin can beat Andy Reid. And I think that if you think about the Steelers going forward, going towards the postseason, and look, I'm not trying to I'm not trying to count my chickens, but let's just, you know, I think the Steelers are the clear-cut best team in the AFC North. I think if you think that the Chiefs are going to miss the playoffs, that would be remiss. They could definitely be two teams that meet again in the playoffs, and I'm not afraid of the Chiefs on the road. That's for sure.
No,
I'm not afraid of the Chiefs on the road. And frankly, this is just for now. I would think that the Chiefs have a better chance of beating the Patriots in New England than the Steelers do. But I think the Steelers could definitely beat the Chiefs. And I think that, listen, I don't think the Steelers can beat the Patriots. And we talked about this all year on the show. But for some reason, like, I think that if the Steelers will be burst another Super Bowl appearance, if they're going to get through the championship game, I think they're going to have to have something happen in the past before they get there.
Kansas City Chiefs, for me, are – well, first off, on paper, they are the top-scoring offense in the AFC. That is a fact. They've gotten a huge boost from Hunt. Alex Smith actually looks like, you know, what the Niners were hoping to get out of him when they drafted him way back when.
He's kind of a stud.
Yeah, low-key has been. And quite honestly, I think that it's only going to get better for Kansas City. I see them honestly going to a 13-3 or 14-2 season. I think that they're a tremendous football club. I think they're head and shoulders above the Oakland Raiders, who are 2-4. They're proving everyone what their true colors are. You know, it's so funny because at the beginning of the year, everyone had Oakland to win that division, and my pick was Kansas City, and I'm sticking with it because the Chiefs are a complete team both on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball, and now they're getting a re-energized offense with Kareem Hunt as well. Kansas City, certainly an interesting sort of thing. I think it's going to be cool to see what they have going forward. We're going to throw it to our buddy Frank Walker here for a quick message. We'll be right back after this break.
Smart or stupid? Those strobing lights in your rear view? That flashlight shining in your face?
License, registration, and insurance, please.
The little adventure you're about to have with this guy?
I'll need you to step out of the vehicle, please.
Okay, so you've done something stupid. Fix it with a smart move.
For DUI or criminal defense, call Frank Walker of frankwalkerlaw.com. He knows his way around a courtroom. 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805 or frankwalkerlaw.com.
Real talk, real experience, real results. Check out his website, www.frankwalkerlaw.com. We're back here talking a lot of cool stuff about our boys in black and gold. I was talking a little bit about Kareem Hunt. He's been great for the Chiefs, but he was not so great this week, Brian. Just 9 touches, couldn't even get above the 30-yard mark. He didn't look that good. He did catch a lot, He was the team's leading receiver, which is hilarious. But, you know, all this talk of how the Steelers' pass defense has been one of the best in the league. Well, this week, the run defense was the best in the league. Steelers allowed 28 total rushing yards this week on 15 carries. Less than 2 yards a carry. I'll take that any single day. Brian, fact or fiction, the Steelers' run defense is back for good.
I'm going to go with fiction because they've been suspect all year. I think they need to grow up a little bit more. I think that they played a great game, but I'm still not over the horrors of Leonard Fournette. And I'm going to say that, look, the Steelers' pass defense had a couple splash plays. They had the touchdown to Anthony Thomas. But other than that, I really like the Steelers' pass defense, and I think that the rush defense just needs a little bit more time. They're not quite there yet, so that's why I'm giving a fiction. But I hope they get there.
Yeah, and, you know, quite frankly, I think that I agree with you. Fact, this problem is ongoing. They need to address it, and they need to make sure that when they encounter the likes of other talented running backs down the line, that they're not going to run into those issues. The Bengals' Joe Mixon has been electrifying for Cincinnati. He has been a real threat. Down the line, you know, there aren't a whole lot of great rushing teams, but I will say that it has been the not great rushing teams that have exploited this team. The Ravens' Alex Collins had quite a day when he played the Steelers. You know, the Vikings saw some great production out of the man out of Florida State University, whose name I'm dropping. Why can't I think of this? Who is the Minnesota running
back? Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook, who is now hurt. Thank you. Sometimes that happens. You just have a little brain fart, you know?
Yeah. Dalvin Cook, he's good in college.
Yeah.
Shame he got hurt.
He's gone the whole year, but, I mean, these are guys who came in and really have tore things up. Leonard Fournette's probably going to win Rookie of the Year also. Not to draw a diverge, but, I mean, that guy has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, I'm going to go pull him up for a second, but he's been unbelievable.
He broke off his first carry of the game this week. He scored a touchdown, 75 yards.
Yeah. Kid's unbelievable. He almost has 600 rushing yards. We're not even at week 7.
Yeah.
He has six touchdowns.
He's a stud. He's an absolute stud. I'm frankly shocked. I thought someone would have came out at the beginning of the year try to smack him in the mouth for what he said. Being, I'm a rookie. This is all slow. This league is slow. And he comes out and he actually proves. He puts his money where his mouth is. Listen, Jacksonville's 3-3, and I think Leonard Fournette is just as much to credit for that as is their defense.
I think Leonard Fournette is the reason they have two of those wins, if you want me to be completely honest, especially against the Steelers. I think he's part of the reason why that team wins that game. All right, I digress. Going back to what we were actually trying to talk about. The Bengals are upcoming. It's going to be an interesting one. The Bengals have been on a roller coaster. They fired offensive coordinator Ken Zamparo earlier in the season after no touchdowns through 2 weeks. Brought in the new guy, and since he honestly hasn't looked terrible, they haven't looked great either. I don't think that they were the threat that they once were to the Steelers, especially, you know, when since he had that really bad rap for just being not good. They've won 2 straight games against lesser-than-impressive teams in the Browns and Bills. But prior to that, got shut out by the Ravens, lost to the Texans, and the Packers, who had Aaron Rodgers at the time. The Steelers are a different sort of animal. And I think that Joe Mixon is going to have his hands full this week. There's going to be a good amount of trouble for the Cincinnati team. But Mixon isn't the only offensive threat there. It's A.J. Green as well.
Yeah, he's traditionally had a lot of success against the Steelers.
Yeah, much so. And so my question is, fact or fiction, Brian, A.J. Green is a bigger threat than Joe Mixon this week. I go with fact simply because he is the veteran and that this is a guy who has had – this is not Leonard Fournette. This is Joe Mixon that we're talking about. You know, this is the guy who is underneath that. And A.J. Green, like you said, has had phenomenal success against the Steelers. Last week, he had himself a monstrous day. 7 catches, almost 200 yards, and a touchdown. Green certainly tore it up. Andy Dalton was pretty bad otherwise. He was 22 of 36. That score was a 77-yard pass. It was in the opening couple minutes of the game.
I really think that Green's a bigger threat. But then again, Joe Mixon could just exploit this team, you know, for all of its poor defensive struggles. That's what happens in this league. Any given Sunday, man, 425, it's going to be really cool. I think the Steelers are going to win this one as well. Then again, I picked us to win pretty much every single week this year.
Yeah, here's
and, you know, see how that's going.
I don't really think the Steelers have played a big-time receiver yet. They've played Stephon Diggs. They played Tyreek Hill this week. But they haven't played – the Steelers have traditionally struggled against big, tall, strong, fast receivers, guys who can beat you deep over the top.
Playmakers.
Like a Julio Jones, Dez Bryant type. I know some people don't think Dez Bryant's elite. I personally do. But so I'm going to say that A.J. Green's the biggest threat this week just because he's traditionally had a lot of success against the Steelers secondary. I know the Steelers pass defense has kind of been the story this year, but I'm not convinced that they can shut down that caliber receiver. But that'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how they match up against him. I hope Sean Davis puts a nice hit on A.J. That would make my day. That'd be pretty awesome, not going to lie. But that being said, I think the Steelers have the opportunity to walk into this situation. You know, they're at home before they take out.
I just don't like playing the Bengals. They're like – the Steelers get hurt when they play them.
That's very true, and we've seen that. You know, obviously Vontaze Burfict is like the guy with the head.
As a Steeler, you can't lose right now.
The one player as a Steeler that I think you can't lose right now is Le'Veon, without a doubt. I think it's not even close. I don't even think it's close. I think if that guy gets hurt like he did against the Bengals a number of years ago, we got issues.
Let's say Le'Veon – let's say Big Ben goes out. Big Ben goes out. Is Landry Jones your quarterback for the rest of the game?
No, Josh Dobbs is.
Did Landry Jones get cut?
No, he is not cut. The issue is that they don't think that he's going to really have those chances to get those snaps over Dobbs, even though he's listed as the depth chart number two quarterback. I still think you go with Dobbs. I think you need to do the unexpected. You need to hit the team with someone who doesn't represent what the old offense looks like.
See, I think that you give him Landry Jones, and then if Ben was hurt, you might think about starting Dobbs next week if Jones lost. But I don't know. I don't want to deal in hypotheticals, but I just can't help but worry about Vontaze Burfict and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been proven in the track record. And hopefully the track record stays a little cleaner this week.
Do you think Mike Mitchell's a dirty player?
That's the last thing that we're going to talk about here. Because I don't. Here's the thing, though.
I do.
Here's the thing. He said it three consecutive seasons.
He's a pile jumper. He does stuff like that. He hits people when they're still up with the ball. You're not like, wow, that's such a poor description of what I wanted. Like, you'll have, like, three Steelers kind of, like, have a guy bunched up. And, yeah, sometimes you have guys do, like, try to force the pile backwards, like, near the first down marker. But on, like, second and 10, he'll do it on, like, a three-yard carry, and he'll try to, like, knock the guy out. I know he's trying to force a fumble. But it's kind of a dirty play, and you I hear it all the time.
You know, my other thing is that, this has been talked about for seasons on seasons now with him. And if you have to continually keep coming out and saying, I'm not a dirty player, you might be a dirty player.
Yeah.
And that's the tough thing. But I think that's another story for another day, kind of running low on time here. I want to thank you all for tuning in today. Brian, any last thoughts here? To grace our glorious audience. Think we're going to be 5-2? I think so.
I can't believe Antonio Brown caught that ball.
Oh, unbelievable.
That was crazy. Like, his awareness to be able to, like, he literally made, like, a juke while he was catching it. You know what I mean? Like, the ball was tipped in the air in such a way that he had the awareness to be like, okay, yeah, I have the time to make a move to get out of the way while still keeping my eye on the ball and then. Like, sometimes I think I live in the Matrix, and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown being, like, video game-esque players kind of, like, plays into that for me. It's just, like, a born-and-raised Steelers fan. Like, I can't believe that they're that good.
Who's the red pill and who's the blue pill?
I think that which one do I keep going, the red one?
The red pill is keep going,
so
I think.
That's
been a little while since I watched that movie.
That's Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is the red pill because running backs like that are just too good to be true. You know what I mean?
Too good to be true. Well, he is true. That's my favorite part. That's so great. Ugh, I love it. I hope we retain him. I know we won't, but a kid can redeem, you know?
Yeah.
Anywho, thanks for joining us, folks. See you here next week.